Certainly happy that you're here tonight, especially those that are visiting with us. We have a number of people visiting with us tonight. We're certainly glad that you're here. Invite you back at every opportunity you might have to be with the church family here at Gardner Lane. It's good to see the Moores here tonight, as well as others. I remember it's been over 40 years ago now that I was going down there and speaking for them. They were between Brother Passad at that time and Brother Shanks, who hadn't made up his mind yet. He was still at Ford at the time, and certainly enjoyed that experience with the folks down there. So they gave me the opportunity to preach for a number of months down there. And certainly glad that others are here tonight. I know Addie's getting ready to go to France. I think about my summer vacation. My summer vacation was Broadhead, Kentucky. So France sounds pretty good, I guess. But certainly we wish her well as she goes over there for vacation. Tonight I want to talk with you just the second part of this lesson that we started last Sunday night, because I just had too much material. Sometimes you get a little bit carried away. And had too much material and wasn't able to get through it. So we just want to go back and to look at this again tonight about Ahab, who sold himself to do wickedness. Now, this is found in 1 Kings chapter 16 through about chapter 22. And what you find here with Ahab, he sort of follows along the life of Elijah. They live around the same period of time. And Elijah seems to have to deal with Ahab a good portion of his life. And it says in 1 Kings chapter 21 and in verse 25, "But there was no one like Ahab who sold himself to do wickedness in the sight of the Lord, because Jezebel his wife stirred him up." And we looked at the first three points last week in our lesson. One is that Ahab viewed sin as a very trivial thing. It just wasn't much of a big deal. No problem to sin. People are going through the same attitude right now in society as they did way back when about the fact they just take a trivial view of sin. Secondly, he married a worldly person. He married Jezebel, the king of the Sidonians. And as we said last week, she lived full of her faith. Her faith was to do evil and to constantly do evil. And if we could just get Christians to do the opposite of that and live in such a way to where they desire to do good as much as Jezebel desired to do evil, then we would have many, many wonderful opportunities. And the third point last week was that he took on a worldly religion. What I see in much of our society today, even with the church now, is that a lot of people in the church will talk about or talk with other people in denominationalism. But what's happening a lot of the times when you talk to people in denominationalism, they're talking about all the wonderful opportunities they have in denominationalism. And a lot of Christians now are listening to where they want those opportunities. They want the opportunity of everything that maybe a denomination has, maybe child care, maybe sports, maybe this, that, or the other. I was in doing a funeral years ago now, out in Bullitt County, one of the churches out there, and they had a beauty shop and a barber shop inside the church building. And when I was going through to do the funeral, they were in there doing hair. And maybe people are wanting that now. But what I'm not seeing many times now are Christians standing up and defending what they believe. All they're listening to what the denominational people are saying and what they have to offer. But are they standing up and defending the truth? And that's one thing that certainly Ahab didn't want to do. He wanted to go along with Jezebel. He wanted to go along and defend her and what she was trying to do. Well, tonight we want to go ahead and do four more points. These will be quick points because I understand you all have a ladies' devotional tonight. But 4 points and then the lesson will be yours. The first point is, or the fourth, is that he blamed others for his problems. He blamed others for his problems. In 1 Kings and then chapter 17 and then verse 1, 1 Kings chapter 17 verse 1, it says, "Now Elijah the Tishbite, who was of the settlers of Gilead, said to Ahab, 'As the Lord your God of Israel lives, before whom I stand, surely there shall neither be dew nor rain 3 years except by my word.'" The heat's on Elijah during this time. In fact, it's interesting. I used to, when I preached in the country some years ago, I ran across a lady there in the congregation whose husband was a moonshiner. Lyle knew the fellow, probably, or heard of him, Ivo Skipworth. And he was a moonshiner. And he would say, and his wife would say, that you hide, when the revenuers come, you hide moonshine in the most obvious places. And the revenuers wouldn't find it. Well, that's what Elijah did. He went to one of the most obvious places. He moved to where Jezebel's family was from. He lived with the Sidonians. He was in the middle of the Sidonians. Jezebel, her father, was the king of the Sidonians. But he lived there for 3 years in Jezebel's own backyard, and they couldn't find him. Finally, in chapter 18, and in verse 17 and 18, it says, "And Ahab saw Elijah. Ahab said to him, 'Is this you, you troubler of Israel?'" He says, you're the troubler of Israel. You're the reason why it hasn't rained for over 3 years. And, of course, that's not true. The troubler of Israel was Ahab. In verse 18, it says, "He said, 'I have not troubled Israel, but you and your father's house have, because you have forsaken the commandments of the Lord, and you have followed the Baals.'" The one who's sinning is the troubler of Israel. Well, what happens? Well, what happens is a lot of times we play the blame game. It's somebody else's fault. Genesis chapter 3, it's the woman's fault. Genesis chapter 3, the woman says it's the serpent's fault. So we're always in the middle of playing the blame game. There's that of what we believe about victimology in our society today, just like in 1 Samuel chapter 15. He says, "I have told to utterly destroy the Amalekites." He says, "I have done the commandments of the Lord." What's the bleeding of sheep in my ear? What's the lowing of the oxen? If you've done the commandment of the Lord, why isn't everything utterly destroyed? It's not my fault. It's not my fault. It's the people. The people. They're the ones that want the people that wanted this. And again, it's true, we'll blame everybody. We'll blame the school system. We'll blame the church. We'll blame this person, that person. The only person that won't take the blame is the person themselves. In Romans and in chapter 14 and in verse 12, Romans 14 and in verse 12, he says, Romans 14 and in verse 12, so then each one of us is to give an account of himself to God. Blaming others is selling ourselves out to do evil. That's part of the progression. We talked about the progression last week. This is part of the progression. Next point. He did what he wanted to do. There's an interesting story that starts in 1 Kings chapter 20. In 1 Kings chapter 20, there's the story of King Ben-Hadad. And he's not able to defeat the Israelites. So they've come to the conclusion now that their God is the God of the mountains. We can't beat Israel's God because Israel's God is the God of the mountains. But what we're going to do now is we're going to go down and we're going to fight Israel on the plains. And that's where we're going to beat Israel. Ben-Hadad and his people thought this within their own mind. In chapter 20 and in verse 23 through 25, let's go ahead and read this for a minute. Chapter 20, verse 23 through 25. It says, now the servants of the king of Syria said to him, their gods are gods of the mountains. Before they were stronger than we, but rather let us fight against them in the plain, and surely we'll be stronger than they. Do this thing, remove the kings, each of his place, and put captains in their place, and muster an army like the army that you've lost, horse for horse, chariot for chariot, and then you'll fight against them in the plain, and surely we will be stronger than they. And he listened to their voice and did so. Chapter 20 and in verse 28. Chapter 20 and in verse 28. It says in verse 28, then a man of God came near and spoke to the king of Israel and said, thus says the Lord, because the Syrians have said, the Lord is the God of the mountains, but he's not the God of the valleys. Therefore, I will give all this great multitude into your hand, and you shall know that I am the Lord. Verse 32 through 34. It says, so they girded sackcloth on their loins and put ropes on their heads, and they came to the king of Israel and said, your servant Ben-Hadad says, please let me live. Now, that's a mistake. Please let me live. And he said, is he still alive? He is my brother. Now the men took this as an omen and quickly catching his word, said, your brother Ben-Hadad. He said, go bring him. Then Ben-Hadad came out to him, and he took him up into the chariot, and Ben-Hadad did and said to him, the cities which my father took from your father I will restore, and I shall make the streets for yourself in Damascus as my father made in Samaria. And Ahab said, I will let you go with this covenant. And he made a covenant with him and let him go. He did what he wanted to do. So many times we try that. But here's the answer. We pick up the reading now on the screen up here, 1 Kings chapter 20. And in verse 35 through 42, here's what happens. It says, "Now a certain man of the sons of God, or sons of the prophets, said to another by the word of the Lord, 'Please strike me.'" That's odd. I don't know how many people would do that. But he's told, "Please strike me." The man refused to strike him. Well, here's what happened to the man. It says the man refused to strike him, verse 36, "And he said to him, 'Because you have not listened to the voice of the Lord, behold, as soon as you have departed from me, a lion will kill you.' Then he found another man and said, 'Please strike me.'" Boy, I bet he hauled off and clobbered him good. He did. He wounded him, it says. Struck him, wounding him. "So the prophet departed and waited for the king by the way and disguised himself with a bandage over his eyes. And as the king passed, he cried out to the king and said, 'Your servant went out into the midst of battle, and behold, a man turned aside and brought a man to me and said, "Guard this man, for if any reason he is missing, then your life shall be for his life, or else you'll pay a talent of silver.' While your servant was busy here and there, he was gone." And the king of Israel said to him, "So shall your judgment be. You yourself have decided it." Then hastily he took the bandage away from his eyes, and the king of Israel recognized him as one of the prophets. And he said to him, "Thus says the Lord, because you have let go out of your hand the man whom I have devoted to destruction, therefore your life shall go for his life, and your people for his people." And the king of Israel went out to his house, sullen and vexed, and came to Samaria. Ahab had done what he wanted to do. So many people are like that today. They do what they want to do. To talk about obedience. They'll say, I need when I'm young, I need to obey my parents. I'm going to do that. I tell you, when we're older, we understand that we have to obey our master. The people that we work for do what they tell us to do, we're supposed to do. But then you come to a passage that says, "Obey your leaders that have rule over you." And a lot of people say, "Well, I'll obey my parents. I'll obey my master. But this business of obeying a leader who has rule over you, I don't know if I really want to do that or not." In Isaiah, and in chapter 55, Isaiah chapter 55, verses 8 through 11, Isaiah 55, and in verses 8 through 11, it says in verse 8, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, and neither are my ways your ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, my thoughts than your thoughts." He says, "For as the rain and the snow come down from heaven, and do not return there without watering the earth, can it bear and sprout and furnish seed to the sower and bread to the eater? So with my word which goes forth from my mouth, it will not return empty without accomplishing what I desire, and without succeeding in the matter for which I sent it." No substitute for obedience. But again, if you're doing what you want to do, you might be selling yourself to do evil, just like Ahab. Two more points. He was selfish and discontent. Here we see the story of Naboth's vineyard, very familiar story to most people, I suppose. Ahab covets Naboth's vineyard, desires it. Well, we pick up the reading now in verse 8 through 14. It says in verse 8, so she wrote letters in Ahab's name and sealed them with a seal and sent letters to the elders and to the nobles who were living in Naboth in his city. And now she wrote the letters saying, proclaim a feast and set Naboth at the head of the table and seat two worthless men before him and let them testify against him saying, you cursed God and the king. Then take him out and stone him to death. So the men of the city, the elders, the nobles who lived in the city, did as Jezebel had sent word to them, just as was written in the letters which she had sent to them. And they proclaimed a fast and seated Naboth at the head of the table. Then two worthless fellows came in and set before him. Two worthless men testified against him, even against Naboth, before the people, saying, Naboth cursed God and the king. They took him outside the city and stoned him to death with stones. Then they sent word to Jezebel, saying, Naboth has been stoned and is dead. It's interesting. You look at Ahab. There's no remorse. There's no condemnation for his wife. He gets up and he just takes possession of the vineyard. In verse 15 and 16 it says, and Jezebel heard that Naboth had been stoned and was dead. And Jezebel said to Ahab, arise, take possession of the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite, which I refuse to give you for money, for Naboth is not alive but dead. And Ahab heard that Naboth was dead. He arose to go down to the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite to take possession of it. He got his way. He got his way. He's selfish and discontent. I had a friend, Lynn and I had a friend that was here today, Dallas Hensley. He lives in Tennessee, but as many people do, they try to make sure that I'll do their funeral one day. And Dallas, he wanted to make sure, let it be known that I was going to do his funeral one day. Travel to Tennessee, the hills of Tennessee, to do his funeral. It's always amazing to me how many people want either myself or someone else from the Lord's church to come to do their family's funeral after they have willfully rejected the Lord. Maybe for decades willfully rejected the Lord. Hadn't been in the church for years. But when it comes time to do their funeral, yes, you're the one that I want to come and to do the funeral. They got their way. They got their way. What do they think that me or anyone else is going to do when we come and stand before their loved ones that have just died? He was selfish, discontent. Lastly here, he had no regard for those who told him the truth. He had a lot of choices. To make as far as prophets were concerned. And evidently most of the prophets were going to go Ahab's way. Whatever Ahab wanted, they were going to tell Ahab's way. But finally Jehoshaphat said, do you have any other prophets? Yeah, I have one fella.
fellow named Micaiah. I hate him though, because he always tells the truth.
But he didn't have regard. He didn't have regard for the truth. Micaiah only spoke what the Lord said to him, verse 14, chapter 22. Well, in conclusion tonight, can I be selling myself to do evil? Do I view sin as a trivial thing? Am I strongly influenced by worldly people? Do I take on religious views of the world instead of what the Lord wants me to know? Do I blame others for my problems? Do I obey God, or do I do what I want to do? Am I selfish? Do I demand my own way? And how do I treat those who tell me the truth? We'd encourage you that if you need to respond to the gospel in any way, come right now. While together we stand, we sing.